Good afternoon. I want to thank everybody for being here today in this beautiful day. Let me welcome all the Armstrong admirers, the Armstrong family members who made the trip here, Mayor Mike Spano and his staff, Christina Gilmartin in particular, all the Yonkers Council members, the Yonkers Historical Society,
yay!
And in the words of Yogi Berra, everyone who made this day necessary. I'm Steve Close. I'm the guy who didn't know what he was getting himself into when he got involved with this, with the Armstrong plaque, but it's been a very rewarding experience, and I'm very glad I had a part of this anyway. How did this all get started? I wasn't looking to have a plaque made. I was looking to find a photo of Armstrong on his motorcycle. Apparently, he rode a 1909 Red Indian motorcycle from his home in 2032 Warburton, which is no longer there, to his classes at Columbia University. That quest led me to the Butler Library, where his archives are kept. I went through literally hundreds of photographs, and I highly recommend it to anybody. They're very gracious people over there, and just make an appointment, and you too can look through Armstrong's papers and his photographs. You don't have to be anybody special, but I know you're all special anyway. How I found out about Armstrong was, like some of you here, I didn't know much about him until 1991 when I saw a documentary entitled Empire of the Air, The Men Who Made Radio. After I saw that, I couldn't understand why I had never heard of this guy in school. Why am I not learning about this? Somebody so local. I live in Englewood, New Jersey, just across the river, a little bit to the south of the tower. And that started my interest in Armstrong. Fast forward to 2011. I didn't jump on this right away, but I started a motorcycle blog. I'm a motorcyclist. And I started a blog about motorcycling in the Hudson Valley. So I figured, what a great thing if I could find a picture of Armstrong on his motorcycle to put on my blog. Well, couldn't find it. That one you see over there by the fence is just something I made up in Photoshop just to kind of ease my frustrations. So that's not really him on his motorcycle. But I haven't given up the quest. Moving on, I met Dave Adamson, who runs the tower, the Armstrong Tower, which you can see just across the river here. And one thing led to another. We met with some like-minded people. We came over here, and our first idea, actually it was my idea, which was a lousy idea, was to have an inscription put on the Hudson Fulton Tower monument over there, on the pedestal. Then when I came over here with the guys from the tower, the radio guys, well, you have to actually almost fall off the cliff to read the inscription. So we figured, well, how about a plaque? I think it was actually Rich Lee who came up with the idea. So we walked over here, we saw it as a view to the tower, and he said, perfect. This is the perfect place to put a plaque to Edwin Armstrong, better known as the Major. And then a year and a half went by. I'll spare you of all the details, but here we are today. And people are asking me, well, why was Armstrong so important? Well, I remember a trip I made to Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, and I was looking at a model of the first plane that the Wright brothers flew. And sitting next to me happened to be an Air Force pilot. He was smiling, and we got to talking, and he said, you know what? He goes, back in 1903, they had it all. They knew everything about flight almost 100 years ago. He said to me, we're required to read the Wright brothers' papers. They had it. And then I thought to myself, you know what? Armstrong had it. There were a lot of guys going around saying, I invented this, I invented that. Here, look what I did. They couldn't show you the work. He could show you the work, how it worked. He knew it back and forth, front to back, inside out and sideways. He could explain it to you, and 100 years from now, professors and students will be studying Armstrong. My train? We'll be studying Armstrong's papers. I always write things down, and I never read from them. But I'm going to read from it now.
Can we pause for a second?
Sure.
We're just going to have a technical pause.
Oh, can I put my hand here?
No.
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea.
Yeah.
There you go. I'm always afraid I'm going to forget to thank somebody because everybody's saying to me, Steve, you did a great job, and I couldn't have done anything without the help I got. So now I'm going to read from what I wrote here. Thanks to all those who contributed to the creation of this plaque, including the Hudson Valley Antique Radio and Phono Society. Give yourselves a hand if you're here. The New Jersey Antique Radio Club, likewise, and the Armstrong Memorial Research Foundation. And I want to thank Peggy Murphy, because her house is below the cliffs here, with the trees that were growing and starting to block a view of the tower. So I was so glad when I learned that Peggy's father-in-law knew Armstrong. It made it a lot easier to get those trees trimmed. So we just had those trees trimmed. I think it was on Wednesday. We got in just under the deadline. So I want to thank Peggy. I know you're here somewhere, Peggy. There she is. Thank you very much, and I want to give it over to Mayor Mike Spano. Thank you.
Thank you. And what a great day for Yonkers to be here and again to celebrate some more of our history. We are proud to pay tribute to probably one of the most prolific and influential investors of the 20th century, Major Edward Armstrong, a longtime Yonkers resident. Armstrong joins the growing number of former and current Yonkers residents who contributed to our city's rich history. As you see, we've been going about every few weeks or so touting that rich history. It was almost 80 years ago that FM radio came to life, and Mr. Armstrong did it right here, just right across the street at 1032 Warburton Avenue, and where he transmitted, as you know, right to the Alpine, New Jersey, across the way behind us, and you'll see that at least, I don't think that's the original tower, but there is a tower there in that spot. That's the original tower.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. See? Continue to learn. But I'm happy that after years since his invention, Yonkers is rightfully celebrating the life and legacy of Mr. Armstrong, whose work has affected each and every one of us and has changed the world of communications forever. I want to especially thank our Council President, Chuck Lesnick, for members of the Yonkers City Council. I also want to thank Steve Close and the Armstrong Commemorative Plaque Committee for the beautiful plaque, and the Yonkers Historical Society, represented by my good friend Mary Hoare, who's here today, for bringing Armstrong's legacy to life. I also want to welcome the entire Armstrong family. Now, maybe your last name isn't Armstrong, but we know that you are part of that bloodline. So we want to thank you for being here in our city today and being part of this day. And I'm going to make a presentation to Steve McGrath, who is the great grandnephew of Mr. Armstrong here. And on behalf of all the people of our great city, it's a proclamation representing all of us here and all the residents of our great city, Edward H. Armstrong, father of FM radio, on the plaque dedication ceremony right here on Warburton Avenue. Thank you. And congratulations. Thank you. I will turn it back over.
Steve, it's the MC.
I'm the MCS. Another thing I was volunteered for. I'd like to introduce Yonkers Council President Chuck Lesnick.
Thank you, Steve. It was a pleasure to be part of that 18 months of back and forth.
with you and some of the other Armstrongs and Laura Farenthold from my staff and from the mayor's staff, first Jeff Williams and then Wilson Kimball, to try to make this happen. Not only do we have this wonderful plaque, but we also have a potential, and I hope in the future this is a great spot for the bust. And for those who don't know, there is a bust of Armstrong down is it the Lamont Doherty Laboratory. Is that in Columbia?
No, it's in Columbia. I'm not sure where.
It's in the food.
Somebody else.
Okay. It's in the electrical engineering department down at Columbia, and the artist who did the bust has offered to let us recast it and make another one here. So that's the next part of this. This is a two-part project, the plaque being part one, but the bust, as soon as we raise the money, so I hope there's a can going around so we can raise the money for the bust so we can continue to do this. Yonkers is a city of innovators, and Armstrong really embodies so many of the people from Yonkers, who when presented with a problem and presented with a hurdle, didn't see it as an obstacle, but rather as a roadmap of how to go around it. And when presented with the problem of cleaning up AM radio and the not the lack of clarity, he tried it for a while and then scrapped it and came up with FM, which was just a better way of doing it. And so many times in Yonkers, we've seen at the carpet mills and Untermeyer say people who have had a problem and they've tried the traditional ways. And when the traditional ways didn't work, they went outside the box. So Armstrong truly thought outside the box, and I'm really proud to be in the city that that he called home for so many years. So thank you, and thank you, Armstrongs, who have returned. And now Armstrong originally broadcast this in English, but and I understand we have a very unique band of FM radio that's not usually used, that's being used today.
Yes.
And I don't know if Spanish has ever appeared on that band, but it's my pleasure to introduce our majority leader, Wilson Torero, who will summarize for our Spanish-speaking listeners.
Thank you, Mr. Council President. Muchas gracias, señor presidente del consejo. Es importante para nuestra comunidad entender dónde fue la primera vez y dónde se inventó la radio y las antenas de radio. Se inventaron aquí en la ciudad de Yonkers, Edwin Armstrong, un gran hombre que tuvo una imaginación tremenda para que todo el radio oyente pueda escuchar lo que está pasando a través de la voz en el mundo entero. Así que hoy día le estamos dedicando una placa a nuestro gran compatriota de Yonkers por el trabajo que él hizo pensando siempre más allá de lo que cualquiera se puede imaginar. Y ahora mismo todo el que me está escuchando en la radio entiende la importancia que la invención que él hizo es para nosotros y para la noticia que todos días, cada día escuchamos a través de la radio. Así que felicidades a la familia Armstrongs por ese gran hombre que inventó la radio y la antena para nosotros poder escuchar todas las quejas y las cosas que están pasando en el mundo. Así que muchas gracias. Thank you to the family.
Now this park stands within 100 yards of three different council districts, represented by Minority Leader Larkin and Christopher Johnson, but also Michael Sabatino, who will now speak.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, it's very nice to be able to honor someone who played a very important part in history. And I actually think this is a great spot for the plaque. It's probably turned out to be a better location. Can't miss it when you're going down the steps to the train. So it's in a real nice location. And if those of you that aren't aware, there are some pictures around in the back that you can see the actual house that sat right across the street. And unfortunately, the house did burn, I think, in the 30s, and it was slated to be landmarked. But unfortunately, the family couldn't go through with that because the structure was totally destroyed. You know, Armstrong is one of many people in the city who have contributed in many ways. We have Ella Fitzgerald, Art Carney, the inventor of Bakelite. So there's a lot of history here in Yonkers. And I actually lived in the Greystone, which is just a couple of doors down. And from my terrace, I could see that tower through every season. And I didn't really know the history of the tower. I was always amazed that something that actually relatively small could be responsible for broadcasting so much information to people on so many different stations. So I'm really pleased that we were able to dedicate this plaque, and like Chuck said, hopefully we'll have a bust. I think it's important for the people of Yonkers to know the history and who contributed not only to the history of Yonkers, but to the history of the United States. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Now from the Yonkers Historical Society, someone who, one of those many people who helped make this happen, Mary Hoare.
I think I need a box. Can everyone hear me? Okay, Steve had asked me to speak about what Yonkers was like in the early part of the 20th century when the Armstrongs first came to Yonkers. At the dawn of the 20th century, Yonkers was a city known for both its industry and innovations. Inventors such as Otis, Eichemeyer, Steinmetz, Bakeland, Smith, Skinner, and Harvey forever changed the world with their creations of affordable carpeting, elevated railways, safety elevators, and electric dynamo motors, all from right here in Yonkers. And yes, Yonkers is the birthplace of plastic. Our booming manufacturing center had large successful factories producing not only the carpeting, the sugar, and the elevators, but also medicine, leather, arms, mowers, hats, and silk. These businesses relied heavily on their workers, and some made rather progressive efforts to better the workers' experiences. Unfortunately, in other cases, the workers had to fight to improve their lot. At the beginning of the century, most workers lived within walking distance of their jobs. Yonkers needed a good transportation system for both the local workers and for the residents who commuted to Manhattan. Trolleys and trains offered both. As additional trolley lines were built, workers moved farther away from their jobs to other sections of Yonkers. Carefully planned housing was being built on the outskirts of the city's industrial center, stretching to the very borders of the city. Harriman Park, right here, is just but one example of this. For those who were financially blessed, Yonkers went from being a vacation destination in the 19th century to the place to live in the 20th. It was not only the captains of Yonkers industry that realized the many advantages of living in our city. Country homes and estates of the New York corporate set dotted our countryside. Homes were built on the farmlands that once were the mainstay of Yonkers, all less than a 30-minute ride from the heart of Manhattan. Names such as Untermeyer. Too bad it's not an elevated railway. We could take credit for it. Names such as Untermeyer, Cochrane, Trevor, Thompson, Dula, and Colgate were counted among our citizens. The world of entertainment followed suit, with some of the better-known names of literature, dance, and theater living within our borders. Michael Fokin, Irwin S. Cobb, Joseph Urban, John Kendrick Bangs, Billy Burke, Jefferson DeAngelis, William Allen Butler, the Bennetts, Clara Morris, and Jerome Kern all called Yonkers home at one time. Yonkers was at the forefront of civic and social changes. Activist Henrietta Wells Livermore organized the very first meeting of suffragists at her Park Avenue home in 1910. The same group later formed the Women's National Republican Club. John Edward Bruce and Arthur Schomburg founded the Negro Society for Historical Research right here on Warburton Avenue. Young working women had the Women's Institute, launched as a free library. The Institute expanded well beyond its original intentions, providing classes in crafts and practical arts, an employment bureau, and hot lunch at reasonable prices. The Institute Civic League was responsible for enhancements to our quality of life in those days, such as turning vacant lots into parks, improvements in the city jail, and the organization of the Yonkers Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. While women attended the Institute, young men were meeting at the Hollywood Inn, started by St. John's Church as an alternative to the saloon. Funded by William Cochran, the Hollywood Inn was recognized as a model and inspiration for recreational centers all over the world. Its billiard and pool parlors, library, reading rooms, bowling alleys, classrooms, luncheons, and swimming pool encouraged our boys to lead a healthy lifestyle. Run as a democracy, men from all walks of life could meet without distinction as to politics, religion, or social class. The inn's seven-acre field on Dunwoody Heights had a baseball diamond, a running track, tennis courts, and clubhouse. Hollywood Inn teams were known as being very well-trained and tough competitors. Our Carnegie Library opened in 1904, an incredible and majestic building in Washington Park with murals, skylights, and marble stairs, a building that served thousands of Yonkers people very well over the years. And our beautiful City Hall followed just a few years later in the same park. The Hudson River, a draw for industry, also was a major source of entertainment for Yonkers citizens in those days. They swam, fished, sailed, and canoed in these waters while others picnicked on its beaches and shores. Racing at the canoe club or one of the yacht clubs was very popular, with club members successfully competing throughout the metropolitan region. Besides the advantage of an easy commute to New York City, the best part of living here was considered to be the health benefits, which are with our many sources of pure water and the cool and invigorating air, providing a rare opportunity for New Yorkers desirous of escaping the city's heat, for at least according to one ad for a Park Hill hotel. Yonkers in the early 1900s was no longer a sleepy little farming village. It was a city of vision, of a new middle-class lifestyle, of opportunity, of civic action, and of social change. This was the Yonkers to which the Armstrong family came. This was the Yonkers where Edward Howard Armstrong developed the interest that forever changed our means of communication. Thank you.
We should also mention that we have another relative here. Adam Brecht is a descendant of Mr. Armstrong.
And with that, I'll introduce Adam. Let me tell you that he's going to read a letter from Jean Hammond. Most of you are probably familiar with Jean Hammond. She was Armstrong's niece who worked for him. She was also featured in that documentary I can't recommend enough, Empire of the Air, The Men Who Made Radio. You can get it on Amazon, I think, for $8 now. And I had the pleasure of speaking with her. One of the Steves, anybody who's probably laughing a little now, because we had, I think, a dozen Steves involved with this, including Steve Sansone, Steve Hempel, who's doing the broadcast now to the Tower, Steve McGrath, family member, Steve Giovasis, me, and probably another bunch of Steves. I probably forgot their last names right now. But I think it was Steve Giovasis who told me, Jean Hammond wants to speak with you. And he said, she's 92 years old. She hasn't lost a step. And she's lost a step, but her mind's as sharp as ever. And she doesn't suffer fools gladly. So I knew I was in hot water right away. But she put me at ease immediately, and she sends her regrets that she couldn't be here today. So in her place, we have Adam Brecht, another family member, who's going to read remarks written by Jean.
Steve, thank you so much for all of your hard work, Mayor, Council President, everyone. Thank you for being here. My name is Adam Brecht, and the way I'm related to Edwin Howard Armstrong, who is known as Uncle Howard in our family, is that my great-grandfather's sister was married to Edwin Howard Armstrong. So to me, they were Uncle Howard and Aunt Marion. And so I bring greetings, as Steve mentioned, from the oldest living descendant of Edwin Howard Armstrong, and that's Jean Hammond. And she is 90 now, in her 90s. She lived at 18 Odell Avenue, just around the corner from here. And from that location, by the way, she commuted to a job she had in Uncle Howard's radio laboratory at Columbia University. She worked there for several years after she graduated from Wellesley in 1946. And she helped, in the paying of bills and the administration of the lab. And we were together when that lab was made a National Historic Landmark. So you can go to Columbia and see Uncle Howard's lab. You can take the train from this very station. All right, so here is a letter from Jean Hammond, who now resides in Scarborough, Maine. And she says, Major Edwin Howard Armstrong was my Uncle Howard. He was my mother's brother and like a second father to me. My memories of him go back to my early childhood, and many are placed in this particular neighborhood. Most of you here are familiar with Uncle Howard's accomplishments, or I'm assuming you would not be here. I would like to share with you some thoughts about the neighborhood where you are meeting, which figured so prominently in Uncle Howard's early life and in mine. My grandparents, John and Emily Armstrong, moved with their three children to 1032 Warburton Avenue, just across the street from where you are today, in 1902. My grandmother's parents, William and Clarissa Smith, and their daughter, known as Rissy, moved to adjoining 1040 at the same time. The houses were newly constructed with a wide lawn bordered by fruit trees between them, conveniently located just up from the Greystone Station. The two houses were a gathering place on Sundays for friends from New York City who climbed the 72 steps from the railroad station to dinners at tables set up on the lawn. My mother told me that meals for 40 people were not unusual. She also remembered the days when goats grazed on the fields around Odell and Warburton Avenues. On Harriman Avenue, the street down from Warburton to the Greystone Station, in a house that was the lone house on the street, lived my grandmother's youngest sister, Rosina, known as Kip. One of my grandmother's three brothers, Charles, lived with his wife, Lulu, in nearby Tarrytown. Uncle Charlie was superintendent of passenger transportation of the New York Central Railroad and later a several-term mayor of Tarrytown. With all these relatives close by, Uncle Howard grew up surrounded by a large and loving family who bestowed on him the family nickname of Buzz for the sounds that he made with his early radio experiments. 1032, as it was referred to by the family, was an imposing structure right here. It had a magnificent unobstructed view of the river. Inside, the woodwork was dark brown. There were velveteen curtains called portieres that were dark blue on one side and dark red on the other, and they separated the rooms on the first floor to cut down on drafts. In the wintertime, heating was supplemented by fires of cannel coal, large chunks of coal that were burned in the fireplaces. The living room was lined with bookcases. In later years, fish caught by Aunt Cricket, Uncle Howard's younger sister, were displayed on the wall of the reception room just inside the front door. And Jean writes, I was always impressed with the size of the sailfish, the tarpon, and the salmon. When attending Columbia University, Uncle Howard traveled back and forth from 1032 on a red Indian motorcycle. I don't remember ever asking or being told where he kept it, perhaps in some sort of shelter on Holly Terrace, the short dead-end street that ran along the back of the house, or perhaps he had access to the backyard of 1032 through the yard of 1040. 1032 was always entered from the back, as it was easier to descend the long wooden staircase from Holly Terrace than it was to climb the steep zigzag stone stairs from Warburton. My parents and I moved from Connecticut in about 1923 to a brown shingle house at 18 Odell Avenue, just around the first curve in the road up from Warburton. It looked very different in those days. We were joined shortly thereafter by my younger siblings, Bradley and Barbara. And as we were just a few minutes away, we spent much of the time at 1032 as children. We played around the pole that Uncle Howard had built in the south yard to strengthen radio reception for his experiments, and we used that antenna as a home base for our games of tag and kick the can. We were always very excited to see Uncle Howard when he came out to see my grandmother. He would ask us lots of questions about our doings. As my parents were having a difficult time financially during the Depression, Jean writes, Uncle Howard paid to send all of us to private school and to college, and for many happy summers to camp in Maine. Our isolated little neighborhood was connected to the busier part of Yonkers by the number one trolley, which ran along Warburton Avenue, with its familiar conductors, its clanging bell, and changeable sides, where winter windows were replaced in the summer by metal screens with roll-down shades to keep out the rain. The trolley was very much a part of our lives. It carried us to and from school and church and mother to weekly marketing in the center of Yonkers. Many of the residents of the neighborhood commuted to work in New York City. The stairs that lead to Greystone Station were once monitored by a watchman who sat in a small guardhouse just north of Hudson Fulton Park. And Jean writes that when I commuted to Columbia to work for Uncle Howard during the 1940s, the station was tended by a station agent named Mrs. Mullen, who kept geraniums in the windows, furnished ashtrays for all of her customers, and arrived early enough in the morning to have a fire going in the station's pot-bellied stove before the arrival of her first customer. She knew all of us by name. Train service is a little different these days. Okay, so Mrs. Mullen is long gone now, but Hudson Fulton Park remains. It is the perfect place for the memorial plaque that you are dedicating today, because Uncle Howard's roots were here in this neighborhood. He changed the world with his inventions, and it all began right here. So thank you very much.
Before I introduce the next speaker, I had to add this. I read that Howard Armstrong rode his motorcycle. I have to get the motorcycle connections in here, excuse me. Rode his motorcycle at great speeds along Warburton Avenue to his classes at Columbia University. Now, I looked up the speed limit in 1909. It was 8 miles an hour. I like to think he broke that pretty easily. And also keep in mind that in those days, the streets were mostly paved with horse manure. And I just realized that's a terrible segue to our next speaker, Steve McGrath.
Not inappropriate.
Thanks. I think my Aunt Jean gave a great description of what it was like to grow up here and how this was the locus of the family. And so it really is the right thing to have this plaque here today. She left one thing out. However, there is a family tradition that my Aunt Kip would do when a train went by. She'd just holler out "train" when she was on the phone and be quiet. So I'll follow with that one. With great inventions sometimes come great drawbacks, and I often wonder what my great uncle would make of Rush Limbaugh and Howard Stern and Don Imus. But what he would do were he here today, and the reason I wanted to chat with you guys, was just to thank some people who helped put his name on that plaque. Nobody gets their name on a plaque like that by themselves. He first thanked his wife, Marion McGinnis, for being his companion for so many years and for carrying on his fight after he died. He died tragically. He took his own life, in part because of the pressures that were put on him by folks who were jumping his patents. And she took them all to the Supreme Court and beat them all, RCA and many other large corporations. He thanked the city council and Mayor Spano for honoring him this day. It's a great, great honor. You got a sense of how connected the family is to Yonkers. My father also grew up in Yonkers, and so I share the bond with Yonkers that everybody here has today, and thank you, gentlemen. He'd also thank Ed Kaufman, past president of the Armstrong Memorial Foundation, who's here with us today, and Charles Zukowski, who's the current president of the foundation, for resurrecting the foundation and putting up a website and keeping his name in the public eye. He'd thank his family and his friends, many of whom indulged him in his interests. The name Untermyer was mentioned earlier, and Mr. Untermyer actually gave him some tubes to kind of spur him along when he was a teenager. So in some sense, you've all summoned up generations of Smiths and Armstrongs and brought them all forward here today, and they're all smiling, and he is too. So thank you very much for this day.
I'm going to have Steve McGrath and Adam.